Hey everybody, and welcome to the Power Slam podcast, finally on video. It's only taken us 3 years to go from audio to video. My name is Kenny McIntosh. You will know me from such shows as Inside the Ropes and The Great Debate, a lover of mac and cheese and iron brew, as you know. And I am joined by the godfather of Power Slam magazine, finally losing his video virginity every single week, here with us on ITRWrestling.com. It's Finlay Martin. Finn, how are you?
Kenny, I'm doing fantastic. I'm just astounded that this is finally happening. This has been in the works for how long? How many weeks?
A long time.
Or is it months? Years?
Years. Years in the making. And we're going to be here every Wednesday, folks. We're going to be covering news. We're going to be looking at historical facts and figures from wrestling. And just having a good time, Finn.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're here. I've got my nice backdrop. You're in the nice studio. We're ready to go, Kenny.
We are ready to go. So let's just fire into it. So in terms of news, obviously Raw this past Monday was the draft episode, and Raw ended up averaging 1.855 million viewers, down from the draft last year. But how do you kind of analyse those numbers? Is that a good result for WWE?
It's an improvement on the previous week by nearly 2 million viewers more than the previous week. I mean, it was a two-night affair. Fair as we know, started on SmackDown, concluded on Raw. So there was obviously still interest in it. I think it's difficult really to compare viewing figures from this year with last year because, I mean, it's been a slow decline all year. I think you've almost got to just review them on a week-by-week basis. I mean, they're obviously doing lower numbers over the summer than they are now, so they can find some solace in that, I think. Obviously, football season's on as well. So I think given where we are now or where WWE is now in the current climate, I think they'll be satisfied with those numbers. That's my opinion. Obviously, they're easy to not because they're so much down from where they were. But I think we've got to be realistic about where the company is now in terms of viewing figures.
And I guess as well, you know, the Thunderdome's obviously helped, right? In terms of making it feel like you want to watch the show again, there's atmosphere again, and, you know, no expense has been spared. Just like the Power Slam podcast here, the Thunderdome, similar in quality.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, just reeks of quality. I imagine there's an odour of quality.
Yeah, there is.
And hopefully that odour is not malodorous. Hopefully it's a good order.
Good orders are what we're looking for in the Thunderdome here in the Power Slam podcast. But you were very happy this week to hear that Cultaholic first reported it, that Eva Marie may be returning to WWE. And, I mean, have you clamoured for an Eva Marie return?
Well, I mean, it was the biggest disappointment of Monday night, wasn't it? The fact that Eva Marie was not a participant in that Battle Royal. I mean, you know, it would have been, I think, the biggest rib ever on wrestling fans if Lana and Eva Marie had been the last two in there. I mean, that just would have been the funniest thing ever. And then if Eva Marie is pissed. So, I mean, yeah, that'd be really funny. Obviously, she didn't return in the Battle Royal. I imagine they've got something much bigger lined up for her. I mean, I'm kind of hoping it doesn't involve any wrestling, as I'm sure many other people are. But I mean, you know, when should we saw her last? I think it was the last time we saw her was on SmackDown, wasn't it? When they did that week-to-week angle where she couldn't wrestle because she was stuck in traffic or she had a wardrobe malfunction. I think that was the last time we saw her, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, the thing is, there's obviously, it's all self-deprecating humour here. I mean, the sending up the fact that she really cannot perform in the ring. So when she does return, hopefully that will continue. I mean, if she's going to do anything in the ring, it needs to be sparing. It needs to be like twice a year tops. I mean, she's not really very charismatic either. So, I mean, I'm not quite sure. I don't ever remember her being like, you know, Jim Cornette on the mic. So I don't ever remember her being like a great promo woman. So, which begs the question, why are they bringing her back at all? So, I mean, actually, I'm not really looking forward to a return, if I'm honest. So that's about that for a U-turn.
I went on a journey there with you to see where you're going to end up. Who do you think can offer more to Monday Night Raw, Lana or Eva Marie?
Well, I think Lana. You know, and I know you agree with me. I know secretly you're a fan, Kenny. And that all this posturing, you know, is to try and, you know, win over support from the hardcore fans. That you're really a big Lana fan, as am I. So, you know, I think, you know, Lana is somebody who I don't think she's going to win the title next week. I mean, this is just a brief storyline. I mean, I'm not quite sure why she has been given this spot. I don't really understand why somebody new wasn't brought up. Like, for instance, Chelsea Green, I think it's somebody who could be a big star in WWE. To me, she was the person who should have. I know she has appeared on, I think it was Raw, wasn't it? We have seen her on Raw before.
Yeah, she lost to somebody on Raw. Was it Shayna or Nia? I think it was recently.
I think it was Charlotte. She had a very brief feud with Charlotte. And like, she's obviously not on NXT anymore. As far as I know, she's not injured. I could be wrong about that, I guess. But I mean, I felt like she should have been somebody who should have been brought up, inserted in the Battle Royal, won the Battle Royal, and then potentially taking, I mean, I know they don't do draws in WWE, but they could have done some sort of double count out or some sort of match that really enhanced Chelsea from the off and made her appear to be Asuka's equal. That's how I would have liked to have seen that battle role play out. I mean, Eva Marie, let's be honest, I don't really know what they're going to do with her in all seriousness when she does return, assuming the report is accurate. I don't really know why they're bringing her back. You know, they've got a lot of people who can do what she can do. So I don't really think there's a space for her there. Vince obviously disagrees and it's his company. So, you know, that's up to him. But I think really they should concentrate on getting new characters over who can really do it in the ring, can really perform in the ring. And as we know, there's, you know, prior to the draft, there wasn't that many of them on Raw. The fact that Zelina Vega had received the mini push, I think really, you know, confirms that. I think Chelsea would have been, you know, a big acquisition for Raw. And I think that would have been a really good feud for her. And it would have been good for Asuka as well.
Yeah, for sure. Was there not rumours at one point that Chelsea Green was going to be part of Retribution? I think there was some, because she had been off NXT. I think Chelsea Green, you're right, she's got a lot to offer. And hopefully they do something with her soon.
I think so. I mean, as far as I know, Retribution are now down to four lead characters. I think Mercedes Martinez has been sent back to NXT. I think that's correct, isn't it?
Yeah. So she's going back to NXT. Interesting move. I'm not sure why that move was made, but I guess we'll see what happens when Mercedes ends up back in NXT and what she does there to see if it was a worthwhile move for her.
Yeah, I mean, she had the match with, in the cage with Rhea Ripley, which I really thought was a really robust performance from her. So she really showed what she was made of in that. It does seem bizarre that she was brought up as a member of Retribution. She was the only one who wasn't given a name, as far as I know. There was some rumours. I think there was rumours that she was going to be called, was it Reckoning? I don't know whether that was
Retaliation or something like that. There was it was similar to Retribution.
Yeah, she wasn't, I don't think she was ever officially given a name, which indicates that they were never really that sure that she was going to long-term be a part of this faction. But I mean, I think for her it's a better move because this whole Retribution thing appears to be doomed from the off. So I think for her long-term career stability, I think she's going to be in a safer spot if she remains in NXT and is just like, you know, mid-level player there. I mean, I can't see her ever becoming women's champion, but I think she can be a valuable part of that roster. I think she's got a lot to offer NXT. I'm sure you agree, Kenny.
I do, yeah. She's got a lot to offer, and, you know, this was the time where she needed to make the move to WWE in terms of her age, and hopefully she does well. Speaking of going back to NXT, PW Insider reporting that Andrade could be on his way back to NXT. He did tweet out a thank you tweet, which he then deleted. But some people are assuming that he's maybe going to go back to NXT. Do you think a move back to NXT for Andrade is something that could be helpful to his career?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I really thought that he was going to win the tag team title with Angel Garza. Obviously, it didn't happen. We saw Garza back on Raw this past Monday, didn't we? So happily, the injury suffered at Clash of Champions was not that serious. So I was pleased to see him back on Raw. I wasn't exactly delighted to see the ease with which he dispatched Andrade on Raw. I mean, that was almost like, I mean, it wasn't a squash, but wasn't far off. And Andrade wasn't really given much respect there. Did feel like his send-off, swan song for him. I hope it was his final appearance on Raw. It's clear that WWE, main roster WWE, doesn't see him as a star. I mean, he's been the victim of so many starts and stops this year. It's been ridiculous. I think he just needs some stability. He needs some direction. Like what we're talking about on the what's going down. There's a lot of people in this company that just need some direction and to be placed on a fixed course rather than meandering. And he's a guy that I think there's been so many false dawns with Andrade that I think he just needs to leave the main roster and go back to NXT and see what he can do there. I mean, we know the virtual audience there will give him, I think, probably a hero's welcome when he returns. And I think there's so much he can do there. I mean, look at Tyler Breeze and Fandango. I mean, they've done really well on NXT, far better than they were ever going to do on the main roster. I think their matches with Imperium have been really exciting. In the ring, it's the best work they've done possibly ever. I think it is the best work they've ever done. So I think Andrade in NXT. I mean, the only drawback to that, of course, is that it's only a two-hour show each week, and there's so many people waiting for a show, so many people waiting for a spot on the roster, on TV. And if he returns, presumably he will be featured quite highly. And that will be a spot that a younger wrestler will not receive. So it does come with advantages for Andrade and disadvantages for other people in that on that brand. But I think for him, if we just look at it purely from his standpoint, it's smooth for him because it's just been pretty sad to see the way in which they've led us to believe that he's good as somebody and then have just let us down time and time again. And that's not good for, it's not good for Raw. It's not good for our faith in this company as fans. And obviously it's not good for him either. So if he goes back to NXT, I think he's going to do a hell of a lot better there than he will do if he remains on Raw. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think with Andrade, the partnership with Zelina Vega was so great, and that going away really was going to hurt him. The partnership with Angel Garza was good, but I think NXT is probably where he's got the best chance of succeeding, based on, you know, NXT is very sports-based, and that's what he kind of got over on in his matches with Johnny Gargano and Aleister Black. So, I think this is a good move for him. In an ideal world, it'd be great if he was, you know, world champion in Raw or SmackDown, but I don't think that he, as a kind of guy who English is not his first language, I think there's always going to be people that they would push above him. So I think NXT is a better choice for him to get further, kind of like Fandango and Tyler Breeze would. And, you know, they're the NXT tag team champions, so it's not the worst thing to go to NXT.
No, definitely not, and certainly not at the moment, where they're all sort of, I mean, I know obviously NXT draws fewer viewers each week than SmackDown or Raw. But I mean, I think in terms of pecking order and in terms of a wrestler's earnings, it's probably not really that much worse than being on Raw or SmackDown, certainly for Andrade anyway. And I think, as I say, I think it gives him more security if he's there. And I think it would be much better for his morale, his self-esteem, if he was there and he felt like he was a contributor rather than, you know, a bit player who's expendable and who's clearly going nowhere.
For sure. Well, listen, there's also some news that WWE have filed some trademarks for Saturday Morning Slam and Main Event. But the one that I am interested in, I'm sure you are as well, is they're acquiring the trademark Livewire. And we know that in 1996, WWF at the time started Livewire, the studio show that had Vic Venom and it had a certain, you know, advocate calling in as Bruce from Connecticut. What do you think of them having Livewire, getting that trademark? Could they do a style of show like that, but modernize with all the tech that we've got today? And what do you remember about Livewire of 1996?
Now, wasn't it on Livewire that Vic Venom predicted, was it the winner of a Royal Rumble? Something like that.
Yeah.
Something, didn't it? And there was a big hype. Was it the Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I'm sure that he. I'm sure that he said Bret Hart winning the Royal Rumble.
I think it was.
So yeah, I think.
Yeah, and it was. I remember that being a big story at the time, and they were like, "It's like, hold on a minute, you know, you're not supposed to be coming on it. Come on here and let people know that you know you're supposed to come on here and play dumb." And Vic Venom, Vince Russo's ego was of course too large for him to do that. He had to be the smart one. I mean, it was I think seen as quite a revolutionary show at the time, and because everything. Well, actually, Raw had been around for 3 years then, of course. So you know, we'd seen a lot of live programming from WWE. This was definitely different, and there was, I think, a drive to try and be a little bit more insider and to try and give a little bit more information away and to give people a reason to watch rather. I mean, let's face it, the weekend shows were just usually filled with squash matches or matches featuring, you know, the guys who were on, who were like the Z list or whatever of WWF. So, I mean, it was a definitely different attempt to do a different style of programming that would be more engaging and would feel more interactive and see spontaneous, you know, anything could be said and, you know, what might happen. And it would be something very different from what we would normally get on a weekend show, which was always really missable because there was a lot of matches that no one cared about. So that's my memories of I really feel like ECW at the time did have a little bit of influence on it as well, because ECW was still a very influential force in the business at the time. So I think there was some of that as well, where they were trying to be a little bit edgier and more controversial rather than just presenting that sort of stagnant weekend programming that, I mean, hell shows. I mean, I don't know anyone. Did you know anyone who watched those weekends, Kenny? I mean, just what?
No, I
mean, you know, all those boring matches.
Yeah, no, and it was only a few years later when I'd finally managed to get like a DVD of the Livewire shows, because obviously in the UK we didn't get them when it was the original show. We got it later on as like a recap show on Saturday mornings on Sky, but we never got the original. And there's some really good stuff on there. Like there's one, it's a couple of episodes where Jim Ross is hosting it and he's playing the heel character, so people are calling in. He's just, like, ripping them on the air. It was really kind of revolutionary. But, I mean, do you think that with everything that we've got today with Twitch and with streaming and all that kind of stuff, is a version of Livewire today that's kind of, you know, a little bit shoot-esque, is that something you think would work and people would want to watch?
No, because they've got, like, was it Raw Talk? We've got Talking Smack. I mean, the Fox show didn't really have legs, did it? With CM Punk and, you know, Renee Young.
Backstage.
So I don't know. I don't really know whether there's going to be an audience for that anymore, just simply because there's so much programming and so many entertainment options out there. I mean, it's not like 1996 where, I mean, some people had the internet then, but very few. I mean, I remember getting the internet in 1996. So, I mean, some people would have had the internet in 96, but it was not a big thing. Everyone, those who had it still had dial-up and it was very slow. So if you go back to 96 and what Livewire was doing, that did seem to be kind of ahead of the curve. It did seem to be, you know, state of the art at the time because of what it was trying to do. But if you think of what they do now and what's on offer now and the amount of hours of programming that WWE is presenting, is there room? Do people have room in their schedules to watch else? So, I mean, I do question how something like that could really be meaningful or matter or could really attract enough attention to become a must-see. I mean, 2020, I'm just not, I don't think so, no. Because they've tried lots of different things and they've sort of, obviously, many of the confrontations that we've seen on WWE, on these Talking Smack titles, have sort of crossed the line, blurred the line between work and shoot. So we've already seen that many times. So whatever they do, we've probably already seen it. Back in 1996, we haven't seen it from WWF. Now it's, you know, I wouldn't say we've seen it all because we haven't. There are always new things that can be done. It's about actually presenting a show where you're having talent at each other and trying to blend between fantasy and reality. I'm not sure if you can really do that anymore and make it into something that's going to draw enough attention that it would become a big attraction on TV or on the internet or on the network or whatever. So I'm not convinced that they can make a go of it in this day and age because of the sheer volume of product and content that they put out each week.
Yeah, they're definitely valid points. I think for me, there is a way to make it work because Talking Smack, when it was originally around, I remember we were doing a live Inside the Ropes show with Eric Bischoff back in 2016, and we were doing a show in Glasgow, and it was the day after the Daniel Bryan Miz segment on Talking Smack that they had done back in 2016. Yeah. And, you know, I'd said to Bischoff during the day, I said, you know, have you heard about this? And he said, yeah. And I said, can you watch it just so I can bring it up on stage? And I think there's a clip of it on our YouTube channel, actually. But he said on stage, he said, you know, this is what wrestling's about, is getting people invested. Now, obviously, they were getting invested in Daniel Bryan when he couldn't wrestle, but they were getting invested nonetheless. So,
yes.
But I do think that, like, if they can, I think the only way it would work is if they were to do a Livewire show where they kind of go, we're going to give you elements of Livewire modernized, but it's going to feel very like 2016 Talking Smack. It's not going to be heavily produced. It's not going to be with somebody who doesn't really know what they're. I think you would have to bring in a host who really knows their game. You know, they know the past, they know the present. It can't be, and no offense to, you know, maybe a Kayla Braxton or a Charlie Caruso. You know, we love Charlie Caruso here after that, you know, Emmy award-winning performance on top of the Blackpool Tower in 2017. But I think it needs to be somebody who, you know, can go the gambit of wrestling history to today and can provoke a little bit of controversy, but also be clever enough to know that whatever they're, you know, whatever they're prodding or whoever they're prodding that day, they're prodding it to make people want to watch one of the other shows. So it's a much harder sell, but I think there is a way to do it.
Well, I mean, to me, Bruce Pritchard should be the one hosting it then. He could be the guy.
It's not the worst idea. Bruce Pritchard would be... I think that could be an idea, because who would sell the idea of the storylines more than Bruce Pritchard? I mean, he could sell snow to Eskimos. That's, you know, what he does on Something to Wrestle. So... Maybe, or, you know, look, maybe you just need to get that checkbook out and bring back Todd Pettengill. Finally.
Wow. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah. I mean, or potentially Paul, I think Paul Heyman could be a big part of something like that as well.
Yeah.
With the famous Daniel Bryan versus Miz confrontation back in 16, we hadn't seen anything like that for so long. That's why it stood out. And they really did go for it. It was totally believable what they did. But you can't do that every week. I mean, you can't even do that every month because people, instead of being special and extraordinary, it would feel routine and commonplace very quickly. So you would have to find another way of trying to sell that program to people who otherwise wouldn't make time in their weeks to watch it. And you can't have that sort of, you know, real stroke fake aggro. I mean, that's only something you can do very occasionally. But I think someone like a Bruce Pritchard or a Paul Heyman, it would have to be someone like that, or even a Michael Hayes. I mean, these guys who've been around the business since the 80s or even in the 70s, in Michael Hayes' case, I think there's so much that they could bring to the table. They're obviously still working for the company now. and are apparently aware of what's going on in 2020. And they've got this knowledge dating back 20, 30, 40 years or even longer. So I think something like that could probably work. They don't really do anything that's got that historical sort of edge to it with a on-screen character who spends a long time talking about, you know, past events or shows or interactions with talent. And that's not really something that WWE on a regular basis. So maybe that could work. I mean, I guess we've got this, you know, we do have the Steve Austin podcast where we'll do a lot of biographical stuff, which will on occasion go back many decades. But I think that's a different format to what Live Wire would be if it were to be revived and, you know, formulated for a 2020 audience. So I think that there is a way, but then again, how much? I mean, I think there might be an audience for something like that with some more historical stuff and someone like Bruce and Michael Hayes or Paul Heyman on there. Maybe that's got legs.
You know, you also look at all of the kind of 24 specials and documentaries they do. You know, I remember watching like a chronicle on Shayna, you know, with her leading up to WrestleMania, or you watch Drew's 24. And there's a lot of these kind of moments that the wrestlers have that they don't show those characters on TV. And I think those kind of moments make you want to either root for somebody or hate them. So to have heightened versions of the real people on these shows, I think that's part of the reason I like talking smack, was because, you know, you'd have the Usos on there and they might be unhappy one week that they weren't on TV, and they would kind of have a dig about it or whatever, and you would feel that you were kind of getting something that you weren't supposed to get. So I think there are different ways to do it. So I guess we'll see if Livewire can be revived.
Maybe like a modern version. Maybe like a modern version of Confidential. Remember that from 2002?
Yeah, Mean Gene Austin.
That was pretty big at the time. But again, that ran out of steam pretty quickly. I think that ran 2002, 2003, and they did put a lot of effort into that and had some heavyweights on there as well. And did things that they certainly wouldn't go near on the main programs. So, I mean, maybe something like that could work. I don't know. I mean, the thing is, they've got the people, they've got the talent, they've got the production people, they've got all the resources to do anything, try anything. And if it's just a network show, which it will be, why not give it a shot? And if it doesn't work, just can it after 6 weeks? I mean, no one would think any less of WWE for doing so. You know, why not give it a try? Lots of things start and stop in WWE. I mean, we see with wrestlers pushes all the time, you know, with a show that's not working, we'll just quietly discontinue it and move on to something else. So I think it's worth a shot, worth a try to do something kind of radical.
Well, I'll tell you something that will not be canned after 6 weeks, and that's the Power Slam podcast here in video. We're here to stay. So one of the features we're going to have here every week on the podcast is we're going to look at a historical match, angle, story, and kind of get Finn's perspective on it. So Finn, given that Retro ITR on Patreon, which is at patreon.com/insidetheropes, with myself and Sondra, we're watching back at 2000, and this week Rikishi has been revealed as the driver who ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin. So I just wondered, with kind of hindsight, it's 20 years later, you know, he did the promo on Raw where he talked about WWF had been whitewashing, and it was Bruno Sammartino, Hogan and Austin who'd be the champions, the Island Boys were allowed in but not allowed to win titles, and he did it for The Rock. With hindsight, 20 years later, I mean, I guess, what do you remember when you found out it was him? Who did you think it was going to be? And what do you think of him being the reveal driver now looking back?
It did seem like a disappointment at the time, because it was like, well, Rikishi's been like a baby face and he's done really well this year. Obviously, he'd had many guises prior to Rikishi, none of which were successful. And here he'd finally stumbled upon this new character with the dancing gimmick and the partnership with Too Cool. And it was really over. And it, admittedly, it was just a mid-card act. But I think he did do well that year. It was his best year ever of his career. Obviously, there was a match with Val Venus in the cage that was really good. And he'd been involved in some really sort of feel-good moments on WWF television. So to see him then be revealed as the driver and this heel who came from out of nowhere, it just never, it just didn't, it just wasn't plausible. That was my memories of it. It just seemed like it was like artificial and contrived and manufactured, and obviously pro wrestling is all of these things. But as we're watching it, we don't want to think that. We want to think that, yes, this makes sense and this is a natural flow or turn or sequence of events, and it's believable. And also the idea of Rikishi facing Steve Austin was not really appealing to me, and I think to many other people, because who really believed that Rikishi was going to defeat Steve Austin? I mean, no one believed that. It's like, okay, he'd had the good run that year, but he'd only ever been a mid-level player. So he clearly was never going to defeat Steve Austin. And there was a, you know, high possibility that he would have just been completely destroyed by him. So I was not enamored at all. I remember just feeling really let down by it. The good news was that wasn't the end of the story. As you know, Kenny, was it?
As I know, and there is more to it. But I guess the thing I wanted to ask you, and it's easy for us to sit with hindsight and sort of ask this question, but is there an obvious choice of who it should have been? Because in 1999, we had the higher power angle, which, you know, made no sense that it was Vince McMahon. And now we've got Rikishi as the driver. I mean, in The Observer, it was noted that a couple of the ideas were Billy Gunn initially, and The Big Show was one of the options. Is there someone that you think should have been the driver instead that they just didn't go with?
I don't think so, really. I mean, well, it ended up being someone completely different to Rikishi, didn't it? So, I mean, or at least the person who supposedly put him up to it in the storyline. So the heat was very quickly switched to someone else, and Rikishi was just really a small part of a bigger storyline. So, you know, in a way, I suppose if you look back in hindsight and you look at the big picture, it wasn't that important. It wasn't that much disappointing. I'm talking strict time when it was revealed. It was like, why has this happened? And also, what would be the effects on Rikishi as a character? Would he be able to make it as a heel? And the simple answer was that no, he really wasn't going to make it as a heel. So that was the other drawback to it, is that you've got a character who had done very well and was an entertaining sort of mid-level player, and you were potentially scuppering all that for this little transitional heel period before they then revealed who was the real mastermind behind the attack. I mean, Billy Gunn, I think, would have been a total flop. I think that would have been much worse had it been Billy Gunn. Big Show had turned heel so many times. I mean, I guess in a sense it would have made sense if it was Big Show, because he was the beneficiary of Austin's absence at Survivor Series the previous year, wasn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, that would have made sense in the storyline, but it would have been yet another Big Show push. And, I mean, he was somebody who had already become such a gigantic disappointment. I mean, for them to present him as a top star again, I think would have been a slap in the face. Incident took place in 1999. Veal took place in October of 2000, right? Been right.
Yeah.
October 2000.
Yeah.
So they had nearly 11 months to choose somebody who this could be, who was going to benefit from it. And I think this really illustrated the decline in the quality of booking in the company. And we would see a lot of that over the next few years in WWF, that they didn't have somebody prepared for this spot, because this really could have been a career-king spot for a rising star if they pushed into the limit and then been part of a bigger story. Obviously, Austin would have won, but they couldn't. I think they could have gained some interaction with all. If you look, you know, they had, yes, 11 months to get someone ready. And at the time, it just felt like it came from out of nowhere. It hadn't really very well thought through. and Rikishi was somebody who got the spot because no one else was available. So that was another, I think, reason why it was a disappointment, because, you know, this wasn't something that was just thrust upon WWF and they didn't know it was going to happen. They had all this time to prepare and they really didn't. I can't exactly remember what Rikishi did after this. I remember his performance in the Hell in a Cell match at Armageddon that year, but I can't really remember anything that he did after that that was really memorable. And I think that there really conveys how little of benefit this was to Rikishi's career in the long term. So I think that really sums up why I was so disappointed by it. And I think those fears were well founded, that this was something that was not going to be beneficial to Rikishi or WWF for that matter in the long term. What did you think of it at the time, Kenny?
Yeah, I remember feeling really disappointed by it. I think I expected it to be somebody bigger. I think the Big Show would have made sense, even if it's not the most exciting pick. But I think Rikishi never recovered from it. Because he went babyface again, I think, in May 2001, and it was just never the same. I think with the Higher Power disappointment in 99, and then the Driver disappointment in 2000, and then 2001 Invasion, I feel like there was just this, you know, one after another big things that didn't quite hit, and I think that's kind of, you can see that people eventually kind of lost interest in what was going on. But
if you think of the time of October 2000, WWF still had so much goodwill with its audience that it could get away with this. Fast forward to sort of early 2002 or even late 2001, and that goodwill, a lot of it had dried up due to occurrences like this where they failed to deliver on a big storyline. So I think, you know, even I don't think the damage was really that noticeable immediately afterwards, was not really that noticeable. But I think long term it did have a cumulative effect on fan, you know, faith and goodwill and interest and confidence in WWF getting these things right. And I think this was something that really chipped away at the armor of WWF's reputation as being unassailable and as being like number one, and in many ways, obviously they did do wrong, but because they were so popular still, the mood at the time among many of the fans was that they could almost do no wrong, and that would change sadly over the next, you know, year to 18 months.
And we will be covering the pay-per-views of that over on Patreon again, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. But Finn, we have made it through our first PowerSlam podcast here in video, and you are contracted, whether you want to or not, to come back next Wednesday.
Well, that's right. Well, I look forward to it. Yeah, I look forward to it, Kenny. Yes. Well, I've enjoyed it. I hope people have enjoyed watching it. I hope you've enjoyed it as well, Kenny.
I have had a blast. I've had a ball. But listen, everybody, we want to thank you for watching here on the PowerSlam podcast here on ITRWrestling.com. We will be here every Wednesday. Check out everything else we've got going on. There's so much stuff. We've got the Great Debate video show every Friday. This week, we've got an ECW episode coming up. We've got new podcasts coming out of our ears. The Queen Street Posse debuting later tonight with Jen, Louise and Sondra, where they will be tackling what's getting them excited in the world of pro wrestling. You can go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, for live show clips and interviews. There's so much stuff going on, I can't really remember all of it, but we want to thank you all for joining us, and we will see you next week.
If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.